there, and welcome to Full Circle. I'm excited to have you join us today. I'm John Wilnow, a financial advisor and part of Full Circle Wealth Management Group at UBS Financial Services. We are located in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, and we can be reached at 610-832-3040 or john.wilnow@ubs.com. Very exciting thing today is our first episode, episode one, and there are literally millions of registered podcasts worldwide, so why would you listen to this one? This is not a market update podcast. We don't share stock ideas. The purpose of this podcast is to tell interesting stories of people who have taken the road less traveled. Given my work as a financial advisor, I also tie in some sort of financial literacy topic in hopes that it will provide some benefit to listeners. Our guest today is Sparky Wilnow. You may have noticed that he and I have the same last name. That's because he is, in fact, my father. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and his views are his own. Our conversation will discuss his many years of experience as a farmer, as well as some of his other life adventures. So, Dad, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, glad to.
I already know the answers to some of these questions, but I will act surprised when necessary.
All right.
So, Sparky, is that your real name?
It is my real name, and I have a middle name, Ray. My dad's nickname was Sparky, and so they had two sons before me, Alan and David, and I guess they ran out of regular names, and my dad wanted another Sparky to follow him, so that was my given name, which shocked everybody when I was baptized in the church.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Milan, Ohio, right outside of Milan. And for those of you who don't know, that small village is the birthplace of Thomas Edison. So that's kind of the claim to fame here. And I'm a sixth generation farmer in this country. And I don't know how many generations in Germany are family farmed.
So you grew up on the farm?
Yes.
And how much did you get paid back then working on the farm?
Well, we didn't have a regular salary. Things were kind of tight when we were growing up. No, things were very tight when we were growing up financially. So my dad liked county fairs, and we would usually get to two or three county fairs, and he would give us a few bucks to spend at the fair, but we never got any kind of regular salary. We raised some vegetables for a cannery, and so we were allowed to sell vegetables and a little stand out front once in a while, and so we made a few dollars doing that. And then we had 4-H projects and things like that where we made a few bucks.
Would you say that you liked farming as a kid?
No.
Would you say that you saw yourself becoming a farmer at any point in your future?
No.
So as you grew up, finished high school. What did you do after you finished high school?
I got accepted to General Motors Institute, which was an engineering school for GM. And so I went there to study mechanical engineering. And it was a co-op kind of school where you work 6 weeks, went to school 6 weeks back and forth year round. We didn't get a summer break like most college students. And I happened to work at Fisher Body Lordstown, which was a kind of a difficult plant to work at, relations between the labor and management, and I was part of management, were not good. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was kind of going crazy because I'm really an outdoor kind of guy. And, well, we were stuck indoors with no windows 6 days a week. So I really didn't like the job, and I didn't enjoy college at all, to tell you the truth.
So did you end up finishing there? What sort of happened if you didn't like it?
Well, I was in a 5-year program, and I would have gotten my master's then. But my best friend from high school, he graduated from Bowling Green, and well, we grew up in the Vietnam era, and the war had just ended, and so we weren't under the threat of draft anymore. And he just asked me if I wanted to go to Alaska and live out in the bush. And it's like, yep, I'm ready to do that. So I quit school, and I went with him up to Alaska in the spring of 73.
And why did you pick Alaska? I mean, there are a lot of places closer and warmer, like Florida, but it just, it seems like an extreme.
Well, like I said, I'm an outdoor kind of guy, and so, and he was too, and we both loved the fish, particularly, not so much hunt, but just be outdoors, hike and fish. And so that seemed like the last frontier. And just after the whole Vietnam thing, we wanted to get away and just get out in the wilderness and live off the land, so to speak, like Henry David Thoreau, go to the woods and live deliberately.
Yep, yep, yep. So you go with your best friend to Alaska. Did you have a girlfriend at the time?
I met a girl in high school, and we started dating in high school, and we dated all through college. And it was getting pretty serious, and I said, well, I'm going to run off to Alaska with this friend of mine, and I want you to come up with us. And she said, well, I can't now, but I'll come up. She was a year younger than me, or is a year younger than me, and I'll come up in the fall and go to school there and finish my degree. And so that was the plan, and my job was to find a place for us to live for the winter so she could go to school.
And did she have any alternative suggestions, places you could go, like Florida?
Yeah, she wanted to go to England. So she wasn't real happy about Alaska, but she said she would come, and she did. She came in August, and school started in September. So the place I worked for, the university at the time, and I told my boss, my girlfriend's coming. I need a job for her and I. And he found us a couple of jobs in the university system. And so it, that was good because we were making a couple of dollars. And then we had a cabin that we had rented from September through April, which was a school year. And we had to pay all the rent up front. And actually, I had to call Kathy and have her send $600 because that was the rent for all winter in a 16 by 20 cabin with electricity and no running water, a half a mile walk from the university.
So electricity, no running water, pretty small cabin. Would you say that that's the most difficult living arrangement you had while you were there?
Oh, no. No. We had to leave in April. Like I said, our lease was up. So we put an ad in the paper for a free place to live, and somebody responded. So it was an old mining shack, you might say, a mining cabin, 17 miles out of town on a mining claim this guy owned. And he just wanted us to be there like as caretakers because he had a lot of equipment there. It wasn't an active claim anymore. He was in the construction business. And he had a building with equipment in, and he wanted somebody around to kind of monitor it because it was pretty remote. So we moved out there for the summer, and that had running water but no electricity, but the running water was outdoors in the creek. And the water was good after we boiled it and strained the mosquito larvae out of it, but we had running water right there.
That sounds very quaint.
And then, so that summer, we tore down a house in Fairbanks. We saved all the lumber, pounded all the nails out, saved all the windows, and we moved them to a site, a five-acre site that we had leased from the state government, and we built our 20 by 20 cabin on this lease land, and it had no electricity and no running water. We did try to pound a well in there and because it was sandy, gravelly ground, but we hit permafrost at about 7 feet, so no well.
So that's an interesting way to live, huh?
Yeah, it was a change for sure. I mean, you know, it was a conscious decision. I mean, we could have left any time, but there were a lot of people our age that were up there doing the same thing, so we made a lot of really good instant friends that we are still friends with. And it was, I would have to say, and even Kathy would say today, that Well, I don't know if she would today, but in the past, she'd said it was the best time of our life because it was just so much fun, and we lived really cheaply. We lived for $5,000 a year, and so I would get a job, get a check, and quit, get another job. The pipeline was being built right then, and so it was easy to get work anytime I wanted work.
Yeah. And how long did you live up in Alaska?
About 3 years.
And why did you leave and what for?
Well, my mom and dad came up in the second year when we were about to start our cabin after we had torn a house down. And he helped me start the original cabin. And I didn't know how to get it square. And, I was a mechanical engineer. And it's like, oh, yeah, you got to measure the diagonals. But he knew how to do that. So he got it started, and he wanted to stay and help build it in the worst way, but he had to get back to the farm. So we got to build up livable before winter hit, and we moved into it, and then we lived another year there. But anyway, while they were there, he asked me if I would be willing to come back to the farm and try it for a year. And so, but I said, well, I got to build this cabin and I want to live in it. And he's like, well, okay, wait, maybe in another year. So I agreed to that. We would be there one more year and then come home and try it for a year. And well, I farmed for 45 years then until I retired in 4 years ago.
So your childhood expectations were a little bit different than how things turned out, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I will say, though, I still had a bad taste in my mouth when I first came back. But after a couple years of farming here, and I got into the understanding the financial aspect of it, and I farmed as an employee of my dad for a couple years, and then he had a lot of rental ground, and so he split some of that rental ground, asked the landowners if I could rent it. And so I started my own business. We had two separate business, but we worked together. I supplied him labor, and he allowed me to use his equipment in exchange, and it worked. And eventually, I started buying my own equipment and diversifying the crops I was raising.
Yeah, that's interesting the way that things can shift. And one of the things we talk about in Full Circle Wealth Management is how life has this tendency to be a cycle, and you'll come back to something that you've done before. So that seems somewhat coincidental that it happened in your case. You had mentioned that you had two brothers. I'm sure they weren't involved in farming in any way, were they?
Actually, they were both like me. They were not going to be farmers, and then they both ended up being farmers also. One ran a small organic operation, and the other one, after he had raised vegetables down in Florida. And then after my dad passed away, when I farmed with him for 20 years, my father, then he came and farmed with me for another 22 years. And he also raised vegetables on the side. So, yeah, we all became farmers and learned to love and appreciate the work ethic our dad had taught us. It really sunk in after we got, accepted it.
Yep.
And enjoyed it. So,
yeah. What sorts of things did you grow on the farm?
Well, when I was a boy, we raised a lot of vegetables. There was a cannery close by, and so we raised all kinds of vegetables for that cannery. And like I mentioned earlier, some of those vegetables, like sweet corn and peas, those kinds of things, we could pick and sell them out front for a few bucks, and my brother raised raspberries that he sold out front too. But then later in life, we were raising some seed corn, popcorn, field corn, soybeans, and wheat. Soybeans was a really new crop. When I was a boy, we didn't raise soybeans. So when I came back in 76, those were the crops we were raising. And we stayed doing that. I got in the hay and straw business then after I got my feet under me. And that was a big business for me. It gave me a job in the winter to haul hay and straw down to the Amish country south of us a few counties because there's a big Amish complement there that have dairy farms and they need a lot of feed.
Yep. So I want to touch on popcorn, you had said.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that's something that's grown. It just shows up in the movie theater, and it just shows up in the grocery store. Could you talk a little bit about how that's different from, you know, sweet corn or something like that?
Yeah, there's three distinct kinds of corn. One is field corn, which is used for animal feed and, you know, tortilla chips and a lot of industrial uses too. And then there's sweet corn, which we all enjoy, which is another kind of corn. And then there's popcorn, which is unique in that the kernels have a very tough coating on the outside called the pericarp. And it is able to withstand great pressures, like 200 pounds of pressure. So when you heat it up, the moisture inside the kernel and the starch, they start to expand. And the pressure builds and builds and builds, and the starch turns like to a gelatinous material. And when it finally explodes, then that starch explodes, but it dries instantly into the shape that you see, the popcorn kernel.
Now people know.
Yeah, yeah. And my grandfather started raising it about 65 years ago, and we've been raising it really ever since for several different companies. And now we're raising anywhere between 600 and 900 acres a year. So that produces about 5 million to 7 million pounds of popcorn every year.
And where does that get distributed to?
Well, it goes to a processor in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, Rice Popcorn Company. And they process it, get it cleaned, the right moisture. And then they put most of it in 50-pound bags and 2,000-pound totes, and it goes to baseball parks and theaters, big caramel corn operations. Fisher Popcorn is a big caramel corn company in the East, and Hers Snack Foods, they sell corn to them. And so it really goes all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. But the processor that we work with, Rice, they don't sell much retail. They have a little retail, but it's mostly wholesale.
Yep. Yep. So are you still working on the farm?
No, I retired 4 years ago. I have some physical disabilities, and it just became difficult for me to drive in the tractor, any of the equipment. The vibration was hard on my body, and the kind of continuous motion stuff was rough on my joints. And so my oldest son, Phil, was working with me for 10 years, and he definitely wanted to continue the farm. So we made an arrangement, and he's the boss and runs the business now. And I'm glad of it, and gives me time to go fishing.
There you go. Did you have any other jobs amid your farming career?
I did. You know, farming, you talk about full circle wealth management, your company. Well, yeah, I found out that you have to have a diversity in what you're doing and when you have a business. And so, yeah, we have a diversity of crops, but I didn't feel that was enough, because farming is a very speculative business in so many ways, because you don't know what the weather's going to be. You don't know what the prices are going to be. You don't know what the pest situation's going to be. And so when you walk out and see your field flattened by a 80-mile-an-hour downburst that came through, and you wonder how you're going to even have a crop, you realize then you have to find other sources of income. So I became a local elected official. I started as a township trustee, and then I was a county commissioner. I got on several nonprofit boards, and a couple of them actually paid a stipend. And then eventually, because of all the work I did in politics and these nonprofits, I had the opportunity to get elected to a corporate board, which also paid a nice stipend. Nationwide Insurance. And so I did all those things, yeah, on the side to help the community. I believe in community service, and so I like doing all these things. And I'm still active on some boards here now that even though I'm retired from the farm.
Yep. And I guess that brings us to today's financial topic of the day.
Making finance easy as 1, 2, 3. It's financial literacy.
And so now that you're retired, how has your experience, you know, diversifying sort of your income while you were working, how has that helped you now that you're retired?
Well, it's had a huge impact on our retirement, you know, like so many people that depend just on Social Security and maybe a 401k from their company. Because I was an elected official for 26 years, I did get a pension from Ohio, and so I have that pension, and then I also deferred some of my compensation over those years. And so now I have that deferred comp from that job. And then, like I said, I was on a corporate board. There's also part of the pay was deferred comp there. So I have that deferred comp. I got Social Security. I should say we got, because my wife was an active role in all of this. Without her help, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this stuff. So not fair to leave her out of this. And, we also own land that we rent to our sons, so we have that income. We still own much of the equipment that he uses. We get some rental income from that. And let's see, is there anything else? Oh, well, I did, and I have to give Kathy the credit for this. We do have a pretty nice IRA, and I was not a saver ever growing up, and after we were married, and once we started farming, I just felt like I needed to pour every penny that we made back into the farming business. And so when we were about 35, she convinced me to start an IRA, and we contributed to that all those years. And so now that we're retired, that's another really nice income stream that makes us live comfortably and keep the lifestyle that we're accustomed to.
Yep. And as a part of that lifestyle, now that you're both retired, do you do any sort of traveling or anything like that? And do you go to Alaska in the wintertime? Any wintertime travel?
We do go to Florida in the winter for about 4 weeks.
Now it's Florida.
Yeah. I have been back to Alaska fishing, but and she did go back one time with some friends of ours that wanted to go up, and so that was about 20 years ago. But yeah, we go to Florida for about 4 weeks, and then my best friend from college lives in North Carolina, so I go visit him a couple times a year. And, we come to Malvern once in a while to see you, and so those are good trips. And there's the occasional fishing trip into Pennsylvania, or I've been out west fishing too, but I'm always looking for the next adventure, yeah.
The next adventure, yep. Well, I hope you may have many more of them as well. Thank you for being on this podcast. I appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation, and hopefully our listeners did as well.
Glad to do it.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.